Hello, everyone. This is Glenda, and welcome to the Blessings of Christ today. It's a gorgeous day here. I hope it is where you are as well. And if not, let's make it a gorgeous day in your heart. Let's just take your life to a higher level where you just feel better about everything. There's a lot that could distract us into negative events or things we don't like. Maybe they're not altogether negative, but we don't like them. Okay, let's just let go of those for now, because we're going to put your attention on greater possibilities for attaining the things you do like, the things you do love, you dream about having, and you need to have. Maybe you've been frustrated about them. Maybe you've been hurt by not having them. But let's even put those feelings aside, because we are here to be with Christ, who walks beside us. We are here to recover our place in the heart of God, which is where we were born and where our eternal life will be. So let's just let go, take a deep breath, and we will be together. We're very blessed to have Nancy with us this week. Nancy, I heard you having a discussion before we went live, and that's great.
Just welcoming everybody. Happy to see some interest coming on board and talking about we're going with the last portion of this beautiful chapter, and just looking forward to being together. Thank you guys for all being here week after week.
Oh, I have loved it too. And I would really think and even feel confident enough to take bets that this chapter turned out to be easier than you thought it would. You know, any time Yeshua tells us about how things work, they come out of a heart and a mind that has known since before his birth on earth how this universe works, because he was with his Father through its whole creation, and he has the simplicity of it. This doesn't have to be at all a complicated subject. It's just, we make a lot of things complicated in this world. And there's a reason for that, that I want to spend just a moment chatting about, because I think that it will be I think it'll take us off in the right direction today. There is there's a Scottish poet that I have that has enchanted me since I was in college. His name is George MacDonald. He lived in the 19th century, and to hear someone recite his poetry with a Scottish brogue is just absolutely charming, although I can't understand all the words. So I'm going to read this to you. It's just one phrase from that poem, and then I'm going to comment on it. Here we go. Like weary waves, thought flows upon thought. But the still depth beneath is all thine own. This is where you find the stillness. Out in the world, you're going to find complexity. It might be positive, and God bless us when it is, but it's going to be complex. We have discussed many times the anatomy of the wheel, with the rim being where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. And this is where pressure and complexity will be encountered, and sometimes even safety and issues of control will have to be dealt with at the outer rim. Another thing that just literally amazes me, especially since I lived in hurricane country for, 8 years running, and as the hurricane would be heading toward us. We only got hit really badly by one, but we got in the edge of a lot of them. And what I learned really as firsthand experience is that just being on the edge of a hurricane can be almost as destructive, if not more so, than being at the center of the hurricane. At the very center, there is no motion at all. At the center of a wheel, there's also no motion at all, except for, of course, the forward motion that the turning of the wheel provides. But if you go right to the center of the wheel and allow for its motion forward and backward as part of the how a car will flow, there's no motion at all. You go to the center, the basic center of everything, and there's no motion. At that point, you can actually connect with the source foundation of truth. And I think this is the power of the great biblical phrase that I love so much. And I'll just get that for you. It's quoted in your chapter, but I'm flipping through my book, so I don't have it in front of me. Well, what I was looking for is, I didn't get the chapter and verse, but this is the quote, "Be still and know that I am God." God is best recognized in stillness. That doesn't mean that he's not in the outer rim of a hurricane with us, but we probably won't see him. If you're having trouble finding God, get away from the turbulence. Get away from the outer rim of the wheel where all the spinning takes place, and find a still point within yourself and allow your own still point to connect with the still point of God. There you will find your connection that you can actually join with, feel, see, and commune with. This is why he told us when we pray, go to a quiet space. He called it a closet, but I don't think going into my closet would be a very therapeutic act. We're going to find more chaos there. But what he meant in those days was, Probably a closet where they stored jars and food, and it was quiet. There was nobody there. You couldn't hear voices clamoring. And in that space, pray. Take up your connection with God and make it real in the world. And if you're having trouble in any way finding the truth inside of things, don't look for it there. Find a place that is still, upon which you can reflect then upon the troubles of the world. For Yeshua, it was the desert. People in those days didn't go to a desert unless they were traveling from one side of it to another to get somewhere, and they took plenty of water with them, maybe some food. But they didn't go there to spend 40 days because there were no rescue services. There was no food supply. There was no water unless you brought it with you. But for him, that's where he went to get away from the clamor of life so that he could pray in stillness. We have seen this example in so many ways, and he said it in so many ways. And, here's another one. In Mark 4:39, and this is when he was out with the apostles, on board a ship, a storm had come up, and the apostles were all worried. And he woke up and he got up. I can imagine you say, okay, settle down, everybody. And then he rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. Now, in that space, he connected with his greater power. In that space, the apostles relaxed. And they knew that God was present. So I kind of wanted to start this with those examples that we could use to wrap up this chapter, because that's what we're going to do today. So Nancy, would you take over our reading of the day?
I sure would love that. Let me get started. We are on page 151. We don't have many paragraphs left, but they're very potent. And Yeshua says, there is an eternal dialogue between stillness and motion, creator and created, truth and reality. If you would know reality, you must examine evidence without judgment or bias and apply the laws of cause and effect. If you would know yourself, you must trust your subjective responses. If you would know God, you must seek the stillness within, where the subjective and the objective intersect and reveal more than the sum of perceptions. The universe itself would be a consuming machine were it not for the interspatial stillness that sustains all dynamic interplay. Change is the basic stimulus for your perception of reality. But stillness behind change is that which embraces the truth. Be still and know that I am God. This is the roadmap to truth. There is an irony to change. If you would change a condition, you must first examine its connection to the changeless. When I calmed the storm, I did not address its action, but first contacted the stillness within it. Then I commanded it with love. An interesting property about reality is that each facet of it stays created. Even if the love by which it was created is abandoned, forgotten, or betrayed, until the time is recognized again. In love. Then you may freely choose to dismiss it or accept it once more in love. Can I pause there, Glenda, and just ask an example?
Yes.
When we do recognize something still created, maybe we ignored it, maybe we deny it, buried it, I guess. So when you recognize something again in love, you want to describe that for us, how you've experienced that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was actually going to ask you to pause while I do that. But I'm glad, thank you for your comments also. Okay, let's just say there's disagreement or chaos, and you would like it to be over, okay? If you just jump into that chaos and contention or contentious spirits going on, and you try to change it, then what have you done? You've just perpetuated the flow of change. You haven't stopped the flow of change. You've just presented another opinion, another disagreement. Now you're disagreeing with the whole context of it all. So if we enter ourselves into change by just objecting to it, we perpetuate the change. This is the problem of politics. Because the disagreement, which is often very relevant, I'm not saying we don't have the right to disagree. Of course we do. We're looking for a better way. But if you just jump into it in the flow of disagreement and change, all you'll do is perpetuate it, but with another perspective of disagreement. And so disagreement builds on disagreement. You got to find a still spot where you can look at what's going on here. What is this really, really all about? And how do we get back to something that we can all agree on, that we can all experience in a common way? Now you're looking for the truth, and you've actually interjected love into the proposition. You see, it's so many times we want love, and we want to see it, and we want to make changes for all the best reasons, but one change just builds a disagreement onto another change. You know, one of the really lovely things, experiences of my being married to Larry is he really was an excellent psychologist. And he would always catch us in the middle of me wanting to change what he had changed and him wanting to change what I had done. And he said, wait a minute, where do we get started on this and what are we really talking about? He would stop it in its tracks. And I so admired him for that. When we look for a common agreement or a common place we can at least focus on, maybe we still don't agree, but we can focus on it. We've created a still point where we can put a little bit of love in. Well, we're all looking for the same thing. Yeah, we're just going about it in different ways with different perspectives, different experiences, different opinions about the best way to go forward. All right, we get that. But let's just stay off of that. Let's stay in the still point right now. Let's just look at this still point and focus upon it until some really valuable, resonating truth arrives that everyone can see. And at that point, there's love. Not necessarily affection. Not necessarily are we at a place where we want to sit down and have dinner together.
We lost you. I'm not hearing you, Glenda.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I am now on speaker. You're back.
I think I'm getting a bad reception on my phone. I've had it off and on today. That's not good.
Okay.
What did I say last before you lost me?
Gosh, I was focusing on you not being there.
Okay.
Talking about Larry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, he just really had a way of getting us back to an agreeable point, and then the love that was always there would show us.
Oh yeah, that it didn't have to be an affection. That the love that is there, you're getting back to the love.
The love that you, especially if it's with a group of people you barely know, but you've had disagreements with and you want to get back to something worse. So love doesn't necessarily mean you have affection for these people. You might not want to sit down and have a dinner with them, but there's love in the sense that, hey, you know, we managed to work together and we came up with something that works. You know, I like this. Maybe not I like you. You may not be ready for that, but I like this. This is good. We did good work today. That's love. That's the spirit of love coming into the subject. So when you can get back to that still point, God is there. And he will take over. That's what Yeshua was showing the apostles in calming the storm. Pardon me. The first thing he said is peace, be still. He wanted to get to the calm point. And then after he got to the calm point, he stopped the storm. You can't stop the storm at the outer rim of the wheel. And that's the mistake we're making so much of in this world. And there are forces that are cultivating this and exacerbating this by keeping us constantly disagreeing about this, that, or something else. Because
right.
at that point, we cannot solve the problem. And all we need is to find a simple solution to our many and varied problems. We can reconstruct reality if we can include truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Nancy, I'll let you take over.
And I would just add, Glenda, I want you to just mention, I really love that he says you can freely choose to dismiss it or accept it, because sometimes you can accept it in love, but it's time to move on. Or, you know what I mean? I think you really helped me with a little particular issue in my own life just then, which gave me an answer. I don't have to stay attached to something. I can dismiss it, but I can recognize it again in love and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just really happy that he, you know, because sometimes you can make yourself crazy thinking, oh, do I need to keep reinserting myself into this just to be, you know, gracious or kind? Or, but then in the end, it really, it's not fruitful for really anybody. But anyway, thank you for that, Glenda.
You can, well, yes, but I will add to that a little bit, is you can recover your place inside anything with love. And sometimes recovery means I'm free to walk away now. I did what I could do. Can't do any more. See you later. I wish you luck.
Perfect. Thank you. And he continues so beautifully. Again, he tells us you must first connect with love if you would change the nature of anything. If
that's
it's a physical situation, yeah, I mean, you have to connect with love. And the word connect, folks, if you're not reading along, it's bold. It's in bold. You must first connect with love if you would change the nature of anything. If it's a physical situation you seek to change, first find the constant from which it draws its power. For a living soul, its faith is the gateway to that still point. Faith is one's trust in God and eternal truth, which penetrates all illusion. By connecting in love with your own faith or that of another, you tap into a power that can result in healing and complete restoration. In reaching a soul's faith, you have reached its most innate truth. This is the most practical explanation I can give you for all distress and failure, as well as the key to all healing. Fighting an undesirable situation only makes it worse, for that denies the love within it. It is equally futile to cast charitable feelings, thoughts, or actions upon a situation to which you have judgment. Ooh, that's a big one right there.
That's a big one right there.
The bottom line
is you can't change anything without love. Love created everything, even though it may not look loving at this time. It may look anything but loving, but way before it got layered on with conflict and disagreement, somewhere there was love. It couldn't have been created. The power of creation is love.
Well, and it makes you think of your wonderful example long time ago, Glenda, just about rodents and varmints and bugs, you know, just loving them somewhere else. You kind of got with the center. You connected. You didn't have to judge them. You didn't have to really take issue with them. And it is interesting how that really amazingly works, you know?
Yeah. Well, the love that's in a conflicting situation might never have been your love. And once you see, well, I really don't belong here, but I hope they settle it. And you go about your life making the changes you can make. If you can't bring love to something, you won't be able to change it.
Yes, amen. You should all write that down. If you can't bring love to something, you just can't change it.
You can't change it. The people who can change it are the ones who, maybe they didn't create the love that's there, but they share it. They have a shared belief, a shared experience, and they can, through that, through empathy or extension of heart, mind, or soul, they can connect with that love that a situation, a conflict is all about. You know, I don't agree, or I'm not part of every conflict going on in our country. But some of them that there are some I can relate to through my family lineage, because I come through a lineage of pioneer Americans going back to the 16th century. And I can relate to sacrifices they made, conflicts they went into, and ways they had of solving problems. And I can actually, through empathy, feel how lost they would be in today's world. Lost. They would not understand what we're even talking about in today's world. And when I can get to that point, for me, it's a still point. And I can look at it, and then I can say about some things, I just need others to work this out. And I'll be here for you. I'll be holding space for you. Because I do understand. It's just not something I can do anything about. But you know, I think the recent rise up of Americans living close to the land, close to the antique values that this country was built on, they found their voice. And I'm proud of them for finding their voice. And it may not be my voice. I may not be loving the same direction they would have loved, but their love allows the conflict to be resolved. And whatever a person's love is, it needs to be brought up. And some people's love is, it may seem very antiquated to you, but it doesn't feel that way to them. And their voice then becomes powerful. And they are the ones who can say, okay, maybe we don't need to do it that way anymore, but I still want to have a voice in what's going on. And I think that's really healthy. Anything that brings us back in touch with our love, or the love of our ancestors, the love of our friends, or the ideals we hold dear, will take us to a place where we can see that more the truth of a situation and less of the conflict. The conflict is all at the edge of the wheel or the edge of the hurricane, and it doesn't solve anything. It just perpetuates itself. I mean, ask yourself, wouldn't you like to have the conflict subside and be in the background? And now here's a big one. Can you trust that truth will make it right? A lot of people do not trust. There's the irony to this. You know, this whole part of the chapter began on this concept. There is an irony to change. You can't change anything without love. You surely can't change it without getting back to the truth. But there's a lot of people
there
that don't want someone else's truth to be the real truth. They don't trust truth.
That's a big one.
Oh, it's critical. It's critical. This is the conflict between Christians and Islamists. They both have a truth. It's not the same. In some ways, yeah, in some places, in regard to some factors of their beliefs, yeah, they do agree. But overall, they've got a different basic truth. And they don't trust the other truth to be right. And they'll die to make their own truth be right. And that goes for Christians as well as Muslims. Both sides will die to make, because we don't trust the real truth to be a truth. What if both sides were a little bit right and a little bit wrong? Because there's a higher truth than both of them.
Right.
What?
That's the constant. That's the constant.
Yeah.
Right.
What if we work together to find that higher truth? You see, trust is based on truth. Without truth, there's no trust. And this is where we begin to lose our confidence in that a truth is just an illusion like anything else. And so we start building into our reality. And we don't understand that reality is all about workability and change. It's kind of like that's what works now and moves us forward into tomorrow. Have you noticed that through the whole of your life, every 5 years or 10 years, you're adapting to something new? I did an awful lot of adapting in my life because we went through so many technological revolutions and evolutions. I couldn't have thought that I would be having a program like this when I was 15 years old. It's like, well, what's a computer? Huh? What are you talking about? You know? And just think of all the adaptations you've made. Those adaptations are made to new realities.
Hmm.
And, you know, in the study of survival and evolution, we learned about the survival of the fittest. Well, what are they more fit to do? Adapt. Those that don't adapt perish. In other words, those who don't predict a storm coming, be prepared for it, move to a different location, because they just think that the reality that they've got is the all-time forever reality. Reality is always changing. Look at the planet. It's always changing. And those who think they can predict all of these changes are literally ignorant of history. We cannot even book all the changes that the Earth has been through in the course of, well, shall we say, 5,000 years. All of the storms, all of the volcanic eruptions, all the platelet shifts, bring about hurricanes, the droughts, the freezes. And then before that was the ice age. We're not really good at predicting those things, which means we've got to stay good at adapting to them. We can predict some things, but just get a farmer's almanac and you'll see about what percentage they're going to get it right for the next year. And those are about the best homespun, but also technologically enhanced weather forecasters in the world. And it's considered to be one of the best publications of weather prediction still around. But what percentage did they get right? I don't know, maybe 60%? But that's not good enough if your whole economy is based on crops growing. What crops will grow in your region? See, the thing is, maybe you've been growing corn, but what's coming up with the weather won't grow corn. You've got to switch. You've got to change for another year. And that's reality, my friend. Reality is all about what works and change, and it's constantly changing. It's silly to just get into conflicts over reality. Really silly. What we need to do is
comprehend it and adapt to it and make external adjustments that work better for us. Okay. And truth is what we find in the stillness of living. It's constant. It's a constant like light. Light doesn't change. There will be some, the light travels at a certain speed and we will have so much of it from the sun every year. But how much of it will be covered by clouds? Oh, now that's another. Now we're getting into reality. See, the light coming from the sun is our constant. But we don't know how much cloud cover there will be. We don't know if there's going to be a volcanic eruption so big that it puts ash between us and the sun. Nothing grows. That's reality. So in everything, there's truth and there's reality. If you know the truth, you're a little bit closer to knowing how to adapt yourself to reality or how to adapt reality to you. It works both ways. That's why we have air conditioning, because we figured out how to adapt heat to us, to what we like. But, of course, at the end of the month, you got to pay the bill. So there's you adapting back to it. You may find friends that as you get to know them, you'll get them to respect your needs, your preferences. They don't serve you coffee anymore when they know they don't like you. You don't like coffee. They'll ask you, what would you like to drink? That shows they've adapted to you, which means respect. And then you go to their house and you adapt to them. When we can adapt mutually and reciprocally, we have better relationships. That's how you handle reality, is with adaptation. The way you access and handle truth is by constancy and stillness. And you need both. And you need both of them to work together. And Nancy, I guess that's about it right now.
Well, there's one more paragraph, and it's a good one.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Yes.
Yummy.
This is it. This is it, folks. And I just love everything you just said. And there's a really good part in God and reality, which I know you're all going to want to go back to reinforce this. So maybe we'll talk about it. But the last paragraph, Yeshua says, Holy Spirit is the pure essence of truth. This is your eternal counselor. Reality is changeable, and much of it created by ourselves. Truth is an immutable constant that does not submit to alteration through experience or perception. Truth actually endures between the lines of time and space, unchanged by them. When looked squarely in the face, truth does not hide, but neither does it disappear when we look away. Truth does not take its authority from our actions or feelings. Our lives take authority from truth. And there ends the last statement. Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, and it makes me think of the cross, Glenda, and Yeshua and Love Without End. He's like, in the presence of truth, you know, equilibrium is restored. And he talks about the vertical extension of God in higher consciousness. And then that, you know, horizontal is the all this reality that you just talked about and how we deal with it. It's worth reading a little more again in God and Reality to reinforce your understanding. But, you know, what a good chapter. Thank you so much.
Oh, I love this chapter. I really do. You could write volumes of philosophy just from this one chapter. I recommend that, you know, all of these are recorded. So I recommend you find the place on ChristBlessing.com. Pardon me.
just getting a little something for her throat.
Okay.
Good stuff.
I'm back. Yeah.
Okay.
I did need something for my throat. Okay. I would recommend that you go to ChristBlessing.com and listen to the recordings for these last 3 weeks, and then read the chapter again, the whole chapter.
I would agree.
You will get the value of a major seminar that will help your life in practical ways. It will heal your body, your soul, and your relationships with others.
And how relevant for now? You know, there's so much division and intentional division. It doesn't have to be there, Nancy.
You know,
no, it's very powerful. This is so powerful.
It's been cultivated through division and disagreement. And people are trying to find truth at the rim of the wheel, and it's not there. There is no truth there. And we'll just keep on disagreeing right into infinity, except you can't take that to heaven. That's the problem. You'll have to reincarnate, come back, and start fussing again. You can't take these disagreements to heaven.
And you can't even get into your heart. He said, you don't present a workable key. You kind of like when you have all that going on within you, so much has to be left at the door. And I'm amazed and reminded him saying, the first thing he said, peace. You know, I didn't attack it, didn't get mad at it. Just, you know, it's so perfect.
Yeah. You know, he only gave miracles to a small minority of people, except for the fact that on the cross he gave a miracle to all of humanity. But with regard to individuals who sought his miracles. You know, he was famous for the giving of miracles. He didn't give very many because he saw the conflict they were in. And he would be wasting his time. You can't get through that conflict. You're going to have to find your way to peace yourself. And then God will work his miracles through you. This is the main reason why after the blessing has been conveyed to you in spirit, through energy, by the presence of the Holy Spirit, I ask you to go and lie down and just relax. No thoughts. Don't access your mind at all. Just relax. Be in peace so that the flow of the blessings can penetrate you and get through. You've got to get out of the conflict. That's your participation in receiving a blessing. You've got to stop worrying. I have been through so many ups and downs, getting down the road, finding ways to get his message out to the world. And I can get very frustrated, and I can beat on his door and say, look, I've got to have some help. And he'll say, go get to sleep. Really? And he will say, just be at peace. Things will be fine, but you've got to be at peace. So I'll do that. I'll stop my worrying. And sure enough, later the next day, everything works out. The blessings can't get through to you if you're in conflict. And you might be saying, well, Glenda, you know, the blessings I want are not all for myself. I want blessings for my loved ones. And how am I going to get them into peace? Well, how about suggesting it? How about teaching them a little bit? You know, I don't have to be the only teacher here. And this is what Yeshua did with his apostles. He sent them out to the world with good news. He told them what to tell other people in order to receive the blessings of God. And at that time, they were the painful victims of an oppressive Rome. A Roman soldier could walk through the town and just decide to kill a Jew on the spot. Even more, if they were a Christian, they'd have a sword through their throat. But he told them to go off out and teach them. Well, they were still under siege for quite a while. It did taper off a little bit, but by the 4th century, Christians outnumbered Romans. And Rome came to them because the Roman citizenry was declining by the year. They were about to be a dead nation. And they came to the Christians. The whole world changed at that time. In the little coastal town of Nicaea, peace happened between Rome and the Christians. Peace between a nation that was a victim, a 400-year-long victim, and Rome that was commander of the world, about to die. There was peace. And miracles abounded. And the church that we know today as the Roman Catholic Church, but also it branched off into other venues of Catholicism. All of them apostolic, but anyway, we don't need to get into that part of the history. But change happened. First in the Mediterranean area, then in the near other parts of the of Egypt and the Middle East and throughout Europe, all the way into England, and from there spread into the rest of the world. And now, you know, we are billions strong. How did that happen? Because peace happened in the town of Nicaea. I think one of the main reasons people go to church today is it's a little time in the week when they can find peace. Some of them may really be into worship, others may not, but they know that God is present and they find multiple blessings and healing from just being in a place of peace. There's one church in just outside Taos, New Mexico. It's probably I've forgotten the name of the church right now. Nancy, you may remember. I know you've been there.
I think it's St. Francis.
It's in the
It might be St. Francis.
That's right. Okay, it's in the little suburb of Rancho de Taos, which is just outside the main part of Taos. And I think it dates back to the 17th century. Maybe it was the 1700s. I'm not sure right now, but I could find it if anyone's interested. But that church is on the record for the most miracles ever performed inside a church. You walk inside that church, and it's like you've walked inside a cave. The walls in some places are 6 feet thick. And the directions it was established on and the altar and the artifacts in the church that had been so blessed for so many centuries, they bring about a piece that could, I think it could heal anybody. I went into the church shortly after I had received the commission to do the work I do, and it gave me the strength to do it. And after I finished the book, while it was still at press being printed, Brian asked me, how would you like to celebrate? And I said, I would like to go back to the church of St. Francis outside of Taos. And I did. I wanted to pray for the success of the church, the success of our book in that church. And I'm sure it made a difference. You've been there, Nancy, right?
I have. And after you told me about your experience, we did go, and Gary and I spent some time in there. And it's exactly as you described, but especially with the silence. It's a really amazing place to help you get into your Sacred Heart, too, if you're someone that, you know, has a hard time quieting your mind or getting quiet. It's pretty still. It's amazing. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary church.
It is.
Beautiful. And I think, isn't that the one that Georgia O'Keeffe painted a lot or something?
Yes, she did.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, she painted. Yeah. Including the courtyard. Yeah, it was one of her favorite places to go.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Wonderful things to contemplate. And I also noticed something about myself. It's when I was in the church, I was unable to think with my beta brain or my alpha brain.
Right.
I couldn't. It couldn't pick up those vibrations. It just kept picking up the vibrations of my heart. Well, okay, everybody, that's a good place to end our presentation today, because it's taking us into the quiet place, which is why I ask you, after the blessing, be sure and make a little extra time for being still and in your peace, okay? And let's just move now. We've been sitting down for quite a while, listening, maybe getting up for snacks or water, but you've been pretty much sitting down. It's kind of like being in class for a while. We need to move something, if only our fingers. Some of you, I know, are in bed. Some of you have to be in assisted mobility chairs. That's fine. You can still move. Move what you can. Get the flows going in your body. One of the moves that I find to be very valuable for anybody, you're sitting in a chair, okay, and you just move your toes and your foot back forward so that you stretch your calf. Your calf is a really important organ. It's actually pretty much an organ, because it's where there's a big pool of blood. In fact, some therapists call your calves the second heart, because it's what ensures that what moves down through your leg will make its way back up through your body. And so the pulsation in your calves and your ability to stretch them out is a very important thing. And especially if you have a little bit or a lot of edema that's accumulating in your feet, be sure to stretch those feet back up, you know, just so your heels go down and your toes go up. Stretch your calves. Then you want to extend your toes so that you stretch the front side of your leg and go back. Take it as far as you can take it until it's got this feel-good type of almost pain, but it's not really, because it feels good. But, you know, it's, you're pushing it. Okay, well, push it. And then take it up again and push it as far as you can take it. Okay? And then do this again and again a few times. Now, for those of you who can stand, do that now. And I want you to continue moving energy up your leg. And you can do that by putting your legs out, not long, just a little bit, to create a tent shape. Like your legs are maybe, your feet are maybe 3 feet apart. So there's this tent shape moving up to your hips. Okay, and now once you're in the tent shape, you're stable. If you have to hold onto something, that's okay. But you're basically stable in this tent shape, and you're gonna lean toward your right side. Yeah. So you're gonna lean into that right side and stretch your left side. Okay, now you're gonna lean into the left side and stretch your right side. Okay. And now you're gonna lean forward just as far as you can without losing your balance. Okay? Because that's going to engage your low back. And your low back is a place where a lot of your blood pools. And it presses against your hips. And that creates either a little or a lot of discomfort. And you need to open that. So the other thing you're going to do, still being in this tent-shaped position, is you're going to turn your body as far as you can now to the right. And then you're going to turn it as far as you can to the left, because that's going to engage your the middle spine. Okay. And now you're going to lean a little bit forward, sloping your shoulders down in front so that you open up your upper back. Okay. And now stand up and lean back a little bit, as much as you can, without losing your balance or stressing yourself too much. And lean forward again, shoulders moving down. So you stretch your upper back. So you're moving everything up. Now, move your neck over to your right, but keep your shoulders straight. Just turn your neck so you're going to stretch your neck. You'll stretch it on the left side, and now you turn your neck to the left side, so you get to stretch your neck on the right. Now I want you to extend your arms out as far as you can, both sides, and now lift your arms up to reach for the ceiling. So you're going to stretch your rotator cuff. You're going to get, this is going to bring blood into your arms. It's going to help move your circulation up to your head. And now, take your arms out to the side and move them like a little pinwheel. Okay? Going, I would suggest front to back, but it really doesn't matter. I think it's easier if you go front to back. And now you're going to bend your arms like little wings so that your hands come together over your sternum. That's in your chest, where your ribs join in your chest. It's actually a very important awakening kind of organ. This is the area that the gorillas beat before they're going to go into conflict or possible. You know, they yell and they beat their thymus gland is there. So by beating your sternum, you're going to activate your thymus. And the thymus then activates your whole lymphatic system. So you're going to get the lymph moving. Now, okay, so you're getting the lymph moving. Let's get in a normal standing position. And if you can, just walk a few paces. Yeah, just sit, nothing athletic. Just walk a few paces, turn around, and then walk a few paces either back or in another direction, because the walking is what then continues the flow of lymphatic fluid. And this is going to create a better response for your immune system to the blessings coming in. So it will be engaged with the blessing. And this is important. Now, I want you to get back again, one more time, to our shoulders. All right? Because we lock up so much tension in our shoulders. And so I want you to lift your shoulders up. Just drop your hands to your side, but lift your shoulders up, kind of like you're shrugging, like, oh, well, okay. And then drop them. And then do another, oh, well, you know, up as much like you're shrugging. And you can turn it to the side if you want to do a little more. And then drop them. Okay. By this point, your shoulders should be at least a little bit relaxed and able to actually relax and let go in your chair, which is where I want you to be during the blessing. You need to be seated so that your feet can be on the earth. The earth is going to receive your blessing magnetically and then hold it and send it back up through you. So the earth is part of the blessing conveyance, and the solar system and other features of the cosmic arrangement are part of the blessing. All of these different creations the Holy Spirit will use to send energy to you and through you. So you want to have the crown chakra available, which is the top of your head, and you want to have the bottom of your feet available for the earth. And I would hope that you wouldn't, you don't have to be sitting erect to receive the blessing, but at the same time, don't be slouching either. Keep a nice posture so that energy can flow easily through you. Now, we are at 4:02, and I think we could take about 10 minutes, Nancy, if someone wants to ask for a blessing or express a realization, ask a question. We've got a few minutes for that.
Okay. I've got 415. I don't think it's Caroline, but I'm not sure who this is. Welcome. Your line is open. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Nancy. I don't know if I think
whoever it is, it's a 415 number. I have you unmuted, and maybe you just need to unmute yourself. But your line is open if you'd like to share.
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Terrific.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, this is Stephen Adler. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say, just have a quick request for a blessing for two amazing souls that I knew who just recently passed over unexpectedly, unrelated to, just a woman by the name of Rose, who I met over 20 years ago, and just an amazing soul, very, very gentle and sweet, and touched many lives, and she just recently, all of a sudden, just passed away unexpectedly. You know, and then another amazing person by the name of Nick. He, again, an incredible coach and leader and mentor. And, again, just a few days ago, just unexpectedly passed over. So I just want to both of these people, just so loved by their communities and deeply adored and respected and so forth. So just want to give them a special, you know, blessing. So thanks. Thank you.
That's it. Nick and Rose. And it's good to hear you again too, Steve.
Oh, it's always great to hear your voice, Glenda, and everybody's voice on here, and Nancy and everybody. I just love this community so much, and I will always be, you know, a part of this community for the rest of my life. I'm just so blessed to be here. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and may it be a long life.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, it looks like we've got Sarah on the board.
Oh, aloha, Glenda and Nancy and beloved community. This is Sarah, just sending my love and my blessings. I'm so grateful as well to be a part of this community. And I want to ask for a special blessing for Aunt Deb Castellano. She's in the hospital right now. And so blessings for her, and then also for my sister-in-law, Kara, who's going to have a surgery this week. Just special blessings to beautiful, beautiful, beautiful souls, and for all. Oh, and a blessing for our faith. There's a beautiful homily at Mass today about how we don't necessarily need our faith increased. We need to use the faith we have, that even the smallest faith, just exercise our faith. And so may we do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's a great comment, Sarah, because we were born with faith. Look at the faith a little baby has to have just to know who to trust, how to seek protection, and how to just to exude love and know that it will be loved in return.
Mm.
Just think how much faith you were born with. We pull back our faith, though, when we're disappointed about something. Not necessarily hurt. It's just we didn't get our way. What we wanted didn't happen. And we had so much faith that we would get it, so we pull it back. We start protecting our faith when actually the reason we were given faith is to protect us. Faith is there to protect you, not the other way around.
Thank you. That's great, Sarah. Thank you.
Yes. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
We love you. We're so glad you're here. So wonderful you're part of our family, our community. We just appreciate you so much. Thank you, Sarah. We have time for just one more Stormy. We've got maybe 30 seconds for Stormy. Are you there?
Yes. An example of what you were talking about today, some 20 years ago, I went to Muhammad and asked for a change and update in Islam. Within a month and a half, I meet the Sufi master in America who told me he had just been given the edict by the Ayatollah himself to create a new form of Islam in America. My prayer was answered.
That's great.
Thank you,
wonderful.
Stormy.
Yeah. And I want to thank all of you for your prayers. Your prayers are heard, and your prayers are being answered in ways that, let's put it this way. They're all answered. They're not always answered in our timing, in how we would like to see them answered, but they are answered from the perspective of God as to how they can work and be the most fortunate at this moment to bring about the changes and the grace and the peace we seek to have on earth. So don't stop your prayers. And don't ever think they're not being heard. Don't ever think they're not being answered. They're just not always answered in our way, because here's what we do as people, as humans. We tend to pray from inside our hardship. We tend to pray from inside the conflict. We tend to pray from inside the hurt, inside the pain, inside the fear. And that's not where they will be solved. So God takes your prayer and applies it to where it can be solved. And will you harvest it? Yes, in time. But you may have to move toward where that solution is. So we always are expected to participate in the receiving of prayer, if only to say thank you, if only to keep your faith related to that prayer and applied to that prayer. Don't lift your faith ever. Your prayer is being applied. It is being done. And when you pray for the healing of someone, let there always be in that, according to thy will, O God, because you don't know what the destiny of that person is. The destiny of that person, maybe according to their agreement, is to go home now. And they haven't told you. You don't know. And they go home and you think, well, gee, my prayer wasn't answered. Oh, yes, it was. They had to go home to be healed. and that's where they wanted to go. And so our will is not what we pray for. The will of God is must be included in our prayer. It will be answered. And you might think, well, if it's going to be answered anyway according to the will of God, then why do we need to pray? God uses your love to bring his attention to something. You've got to think about this. There are no numbers. No numbers ever created to list all that God's attention is on. His attention is everywhere. But is it relevant to the moment where someone is really needing his care and doesn't even know to pray, doesn't have a powerful relationship to establish the connection? And they just float on down the river thinking nobody cares about them. You pray for them, and God's attention goes immediately on them. Immediately on them, because you prayed for them.
Beautiful.
You have
Thank
pulled
you,
them out. What?
I said that was beautiful. Yes. Thank you, Glenda.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, let's get ready. Let's get ready for our blessing. Be seated, and I will say my prayer to Yeshua, providing his invitation and our invocation to join him. And then move into your prayer. For the same reason I was telling you about praying for others, you need to pray also. And Yeshua said so to the apostles. He told them, knock and the door will be opened. Ask and you shall get, you shall receive. And why do you need to pray if God knows what you need? He doesn't know you're ready to receive. He doesn't know your attention is on the problem. He doesn't know your timing is there. You are a participant in what you receive. You need to engage with your provider. He's not going to be a parent that just writes checks and puts them in your deposit account without anything ever being communicated with between you and him. Just think of your father, okay? You need money for tuition. You think without even asking or saying a word about it, I'm talking about your earthly father, is going to write a check and just go put it in your bank account? It's not going to happen. You've got to ask. And you've got to be ready to receive. Your prayer does both. Your prayer makes you ready to receive, and it also asks your Father for the blessing. That's what is needed. You're not praying enough, or you're not praying enough with understanding. And right now, I want you to. That's what I want you to do. But when you're resting after the blessing, I don't even want you to pray. Because much as we try to come only from the heart, when we speak words, those words also come from the mind. And they come from whatever problem the mind is trying to solve or seek relief from. So don't be in your mind at all when you're in peace afterwards. But it's okay now. Pray from your heart as much as you can. And from your mind as much as you need to feel satisfied that you've spoken to your Father with all of your needs and requirements, and let them be known. Blessing givers, will you be prepared to join me after my prayer to Yeshua? beloved Son of God, Lord of life, and perfect brother to us all. Thank you that you cared enough to come here and remind us what we are capable of. We thank you for your forgiveness. We thank you for extracting us from the bitter and conflicting flow of life that we rarely understand and mostly misconceive. Thank you for accepting our prayers and attending to our needs. Thank you for being with us through our pleasures and our pains. Thank you for being our counselor and our teacher, and the one who pulls us aside when we need to be reminded that we might want to rethink what we're doing. The one who becomes our conscience when we have not thought about the consequences of our action. We ask for your blessings on the life of all these people who have come to your altar to ask you, with the peace and simplicity of a child, to be their guide, to help them find their way to truth, and to adapt to reality in the most beneficial way and productive way that is possible. We ask that you be with the children and teach them the importance of retaining their faith and the courage to look always for the best in life and the best in themselves. We ask that you heal the sick and hear the prayers of all that are praying now. We ask that you take peacefully and blissfully home all of those who are awaiting their ascension to a higher place. May they see the heaven of their dreams and see their life fulfilled, that they may rejoin again with their Creator to be made whole and at last truly happy, to be bringers of the way to those they left behind, to those they still loved and care about. Help them to do what they need to do to complete their life on high ground now, just as you helped us to complete our life on earth. Thank you for all of the teachers and the truth bringers, the healers and the ministers, the teachers, the parents, those who are here to provide a continuation of the best thoughts that we can carry with us through our life, to help us understand that the Holy Spirit is in us and with us in all ways, where we can seek guidance and reformation for our life. All these things we ask in your name, with your blessed heart, in your triumphal spirit, and in your grace to provide ways to all the best in life, that it may become all the best for our journey through life. In your holy name, now we send this prayer for the benefit of all people everywhere, for those who don't know to pray, for those who don't know what to believe. May they simply be guided by the Spirit of Truth that stills the water of the storm and brings understanding on the true side of reality. Amen. I think, Ruth, will you stand now and join me in conveying the energy of the blessing? And may all be blessed. I'm in. Your blessing has been given. Now, I want you to go and rest, laying flat on your bed, on a sofa, a mat, or a blanket in the backyard. It's not the thing that matters. What matters is that you're at peace. Your body is laying flat, all parts of your body equal to the other, and you are at peace. Receive in peace. Receive the abundance of blessings that are there for you to receive. I wish you a wonderful week, many blessings to flow, and bye-bye for now. Let's be sure and reconnect next Sunday. Okay.